Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound, it's John Vocat, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning in to the award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Speaking of the environment, did you know that only about half of state residents know that certain plastic items can be brought to grocery or retail stores to be properly recycled? Plus, few residents are aware of the various types of plastic bags and wraps that can be recycled. So we're going to open rerunning a previous broadcast with the DEEP's Wrap Program Coordinator to learn about the exciting new Wrap Recycling Action Project. Then we'll hear about the challenges facing one of the older and premier human and family service agencies in the state, The Connection. Each month, thousands of people throughout Connecticut are assisted by The Connection's diverse behavioral health, family support, and community justice programs. So we'll tell you about some of these programs and how you can help sustain this critical network of services. And we'll close introducing another organization that sprung from the grassroots of one individual's desire to help feed the hungry in Greater Bridgeport. This has grown into a legitimate nonprofit called Helping Hands Outreach. So we'll learn how this humble effort has attracted the attention and support not only in the community, but even Subaru's Share the Love initiative. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vocat, right after this reminder. 48 million Americans experience hearing loss. Hearing loss not only affects individuals, but their families as well. The entire family may be struggling to be heard or understood, leading to feelings of sadness and loneliness. Hearing loss can compromise relationships, but it doesn't have to. Get a hearing test and obtain treatment if needed. You can visit hearingloss.org to learn more. This has been a public service message from High Health Innovations and Hearing Loss Association of America.
Okay.
So as you heard in our introduction, we are also going to be talking about a really important environmental initiative that has come to Connecticut. As somebody who is a chronic and very enthusiastic reusable shopping bag owner and user, I couldn't have been happier to hear that state officials and recycling advocates have launched a new campaign to increase the recycling of plastic bags and wraps, noting that a survey finds most people in Connecticut are not yet aware of where and what to recycle. So we have turned to a very appropriate guest, the Wrap Coordinator for the Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. She is an environmental analyst. Cheryl Baldwin is with us on the line. Cheryl, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me just a little bit about yourself and when the whole issue about plastic bags really started to kind of hit home with you and kind of inspire you to get involved to try to help educate people.
So I've been with the department for about 8 years, and I work in the source reduction and recycling group. But I have worked on a number of materials management efforts in other states as well. When I first came to Connecticut, I actually worked for Save the Sound, and I did a lot of beach litter cleanups. And there, of course, you do find a lot of plastic litter, including bags and other plastic film. But now that I'm working with the agency, we have, of course, curbside programs as well as maybe your transfer station where you can bring your mixed recyclables. And a lot of people will put plastic bags in there. And sadly, that is a contaminant. And when you talk to materials recovery facilities across the state, plastic film and plastic bags are the number one contaminant, and it causes a number of different problems. So I'm excited that we have a solution.
Well, that's great. Can you help educate me and other people? I mean, I know right now that when I go out on my front lawn to let my dog out, or I'm looking out of my second story bedroom or living room window, I'm looking at two big shredded white flappy plastic bags stuck in my trees in my front yard. And I just can't imagine the type of environmental trauma that one of these bags could cause a bird or a sea animal or other animal if it gets wrapped up in it. But can you kind of validate some of the detriments of so many of these plastic bags just kind of trundling and blowing around in our neighborhoods and parking lots?
Sure. So litter is definitely an issue, and there are a number of different environmental concerns associated with litter. When you have plastic bags and other materials, they have a chance of getting into our waterways, which is very tragic. It can cause a lot of problems for animals and different animal habitat. So in terms of trying to spin it around as a solution, one, we shouldn't be littering. We should try to figure out how to not throw away things onto the ground or in our waterways. But in terms of recycling, I love this program because it does give us an alternative that we can bring it to our local grocers, or we can bring it to a local retailer that's participating in the program. You had mentioned you like to reuse bags, and I want to remind people that of course, the first thing to do is to use reusable bags or not to take a bag. But many of us need bags. And if we can't reuse them for your dog or your pet waste, and maybe you can't reuse it in another way, this program gives us a great alternative.
Great. So let's talk about what finally helped move Connecticut into scope for this fantastic plastic bag and wrap recycling initiative.
So we're in partnership with the American Chemistry Council. The WRAP program is something that they coordinate nationally. They have worked with a number of different cities and communities, and we're actually the third state in looking at how can we implement this campaign or this program on a statewide level. In some ways, it's a pilot. They're experiencing and having new efforts, if you will, come about as a result of partnering with us. We are promoting return to retail, but we're also exploring other opportunities. In Connecticut, which apparently is different from other states where they have worked, we have a lot of municipal transfer stations. And they're not just where we bring our trash or our recyclables, but it's a really great community, you know, place. I don't know if you personally have a town transfer station, but it's often where you meet friends, you get to hear what's going on in town, and you get to do a lot more than just bring your trash. And a lot of municipalities want to try to develop a drop-off program for plastic film. So while we are very excited to have partners and retailers, it's also exciting that some municipalities are trying to figure out how to serve their residents with drop-off programs as well.
So I guess the next logical question is, to help inspire people, if it's not just about reducing these unsightly bags blowing around and helping in so many ways to protect the environment and animals and sea creatures, there is also the positive outcome of how these bags can be reused when they're recycled en masse. Can we talk a little bit about how the recycling process works and what comes out of the other end that makes these recycled products more sustainable?
Sure. So I'm going to back up a little bit. If
sure.
you, we're talking about plastic bags,
mm-hmm.
but we're talking about more than just bags. We're talking about plastic film. And a lot of people are like, what do you mean, like film, like a movie? No, it has to do with sort of saran wrap, Ziploc bags, bags from bread bags or containers. If you get bulk toilet paper or paper towels that wrap around it, all of that is plastic film. If you were going to go into a grocery store or a retailer and you have that container up in front of the store that says, we take your bags, they actually take bags and other film. And if you're going to do a little mini audit and look at all the different materials that are in that container, you would find only 25% is grocery bags.
Oh.
The rest of it is everything else. And I think it's one of the reasons I love this program is that it's more than just bags. It is so much more material. And so if you think about all the materials we could be capturing and diverting or recovering, there it's endless about how many materials. I was surprised that you could do cereal bags. That was the big thing. We apparently eat a lot of cereal at my house. Mm-hmm. So we were very excited. And so when you look at all that film is then can be made into new products. Those products aren't necessarily made locally, but there's a number of different companies in the country that make lumber and different swing sets or different materials where they're using that plastic. So I think it's great. I think it's a great program because it gives us an alternative as opposed to us saying, don't put your plastic bags in the recycling, you should put them in the trash. It gives us a great way of recovering that material, and then somebody else, like Trex is one of our partners, uses that to create new products.
Okay. So, folks, if you just joined us, we're talking, we're rapping. Yes, we're rapping with the rap coordinator here in Connecticut. Cheryl Baldwin is an environmental analyst with DEEP, and we're talking about the recently launched rap program. Connecticut RAP stands for RAP Recycling Action Project. And we've got a few more minutes with Cheryl on this subject before we move out for the day. So Cheryl, for the growing number of communities here in Connecticut that are utilizing, at least the larger ones, with the single stream recycling where everything just goes into one bin, is that an alternative right now instead of having to be mindful of collecting every little plastic shopping bag and scrap of plastic wrap material and remembering to stuff it into our reusable shopping bags so that we can bring them to the grocery store and drop them in the lobby? Can we just, for communities with single stream recycling, can all this just go in with everything else into the bin?
Definitely not. You definitely want to bring them back to the grocer or the retailer, or if your municipality is collecting them at your transfer station. You do not want to put them in the recycling bin. You don't want to put them in your mixed recyclables because they gum up the works. So I think I mentioned earlier, they really are the number one contaminant. First, it causes safety concerns. We have 5 materials recovery facilities. I'm sure a lot of people might have seen pictures or videos. You know, it's a bunch of conveyor belts and things are getting pulled off by magnets or getting blown off. Well, there's also a manual component to all of our facilities. Sometimes they might suck up bags by vacuum, but often what happens is you have staff, you have employees that are trying to pull those bags off before it goes further into the system, because in the system they get all wound up in the gears. They get all wound up in that material. And what is very sad is that they get so wound up and there's so much material in there that during breaks and lunch periods, staff has to actually, when the machines are turned off, jump into those systems and manually cut and rip that material off before they can start working and operating again.
Okay.
So think about it in terms of plastic bags cause safety concerns to staff and employees that work in the recycling industry. And then you also reduce the value of that material. So we talked about Trex and other companies that want to make new products out of this plastic. If it goes through a MRF facility, the value of that material is so degraded or there's no value at all. Whereas if we recover it and bring it to a retailer, that value is retained. And so we're not causing safety concerns and we're not devaluing the material when we bring it to the store. But you definitely do not want to put it with your mixed recyclables because you're just going to contaminate and cause safety concerns for the staff.
Very good. Well, I learned a lot in this brief conversation, Cheryl, and very excited once again to know that there are some alternatives now. It's interesting that according to surveys, of Connecticut residents, only around half of them were aware that certain plastic items can be brought to grocery or retail stores to ensure proper recycling. And fewer residents are aware of the various types of plastic bags and wraps that can be recycled. So I thank you for giving us the information, and I'd like to turn residents over to a much broader resource. Plasticfilmrecycling.org is a website that they can go to learn more. And hopefully, as this program grows and becomes more successful, we'll be able to visit with you again to learn a little bit more and get an update on how things are going, if you're up for that. In the meantime, we thank you for your great work. Cheryl Baldwin is the RAP coordinator here in Connecticut and environmental analyst for the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. Thanks again, Cheryl, for being on the program. Well, if you're listening to the program a couple of weeks ago, we talked with Claire Behan, who was at the time promoting another activity. But we did mention during that taping that we'd be back in a couple of weeks. And here we are with Beth Connor. She's the Director of Communications and Fund Development for The Connection Incorporated. For more than 40 years, The Connection's been one of Connecticut's leading private nonprofit human service and community development agencies. Thousands of people throughout the state of Connecticut are assisted by the Connection's behavioral health, family support, and community justice programs. And we're going to drill in and talk about a number of them today, as well as inviting you to something that's coming up pretty quick, but that sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. That is the Unmasking Homelessness Masquerade Ball on May 24th. And then hopefully you'll be coming into New Haven to see some of or much of the International Festival of Arts and Ideas. But we hope that you will plan at least one of your visits sometime between June 21st and 23rd at lunchtime, so you could take advantage of many of the greatest pizzas on Earth, or the pizza makers on Earth will be providing slices to the Connection's Pizza Fest on the Green in New Haven. They'll be selling those slices to help and other refreshments to benefit the organization. So we'll be talking all about that with Beth Connor. Beth, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
So as we kind of talked before we went on the air this morning, you're working on a brand new project and literally on the set of a video shoot as we speak. Tell us a little bit about that excitement.
Well, we are. We're actually, I'm in Bridgeport right now as I'm speaking with you, and we are filming a video on a new program to help children involved with the ABC Head Start program, children and their families that are homeless, find a safe, affordable place to live and receive case management services that help them along their journey. One out of three children in Bridgeport experiences homelessness, and half of those children are under the age of five. We are teaming up with lots of experts from the Head Start program and other areas to try to bring this program forward because we believe so strongly in it. Unfortunately, we do not have enough funding for this program, so we're shooting this video in hopes that funders and other philanthropists understand it and want to help us raise money for this needed program.
And there are a few important reasons why this initiative is so critically important and much of the work that's done by the Connection, because their services and offices are spread across the state. And many of the programs not only rebuild the health of individuals in the communities and strengthen those communities, they offer less costly alternatives to state-funded programs that ultimately save taxpayer dollars. It's kind of unfortunate, the situation that we're in right now in Hartford, where it appears many organizations, including like the including the Connection, or and those like them, are going to be suffering as a result mm-hmm. of the economic situation that's going on. And it makes it even more important for individuals who are able to step up and support organizations like The Connection, because the return, the ROI that you get from each of those dollars that you donate to The Connection really makes a big impact and actually could play a role in maybe not helping the state, but mitigating some of the damage or losses that could be suffered as a result of state rollbacks that were probably going to be inevitable in the coming months and years. So, Beth, let's drill into it. I guess one of the biggest and most effective programs of The Connection is Connection House in Middletown. Tell us a little bit about that mm-hmm. agency.
Well, Connection House is one of our many programs. We have about 42 different programs statewide. Connection House is a residential program for folks with a mental health and a substance use disorder. We have other programs like that throughout the state. We have many different programs. We classify them in three different areas. We have behavioral health services, so programs, a number of programs, including outpatient clinics, that help people with their behavioral health and substance use challenges. Mm-hmm. We have community justice programs, which are programs for offenders who are either leaving prison and are trying to reintegrate into society or are looking for alternatives to incarceration. So we offer some alternative programs. And then we also have a whole range of services that we label family support services. This video that I'm filming today falls under that category. One of our biggest programs in terms of how many people we help is supportive housing for families. And that is a statewide program. It's actually a national model that matches families with case managers at The Connection to find houses, find safe, affordable housing, and more importantly, reunite families that have been broken apart because of abuse, neglect, domestic violence, other issues that plague society. And we've had a lot of success. The program is almost 20 years old. And right now we have about 500 families across the state who participate in this program. And we have a wait list of about 600 more families. Mm-hmm. So the help is really needed out there. And you're right, John. Unfortunately, we do not receive enough state funding for all of our programs, and we're very fortunate that the Department of Children and Families funds this program, but with the state budget cuts, it's very difficult for us to know how our programs are going to continue. So we do special events, which I know we'll get into in a bit, and we're always looking for private philanthropy because the services that we do provide are so needed in Connecticut, and a lot of the folks that we do work with are sort of the forgotten folks who really desperately need these services and can't pay for them.
Yeah. Well, in 40 years of continuous operation, you gain a lot of experience and you also become a trendsetter and a precedent setter. Mm-hmm. You have some first of its kind programs in the state. You have other programs mm-hmm. that have set a national model. One of the ones I always like to talk about because it's been a subject that's been important to me and the award winning For the People for many, many, many years is the transition from incarceration back into society with the ultimate goal of no recidivism to the mm-hmm. individuals. And this, your organization, I mean, say what you will about the challenges going on in Hartford, but Connecticut has set a national example with its Second Chance Society work that it's doing and helping individuals out of incarceration to get back into society, become productive members, and not reoccur and get put back in incarceration. And your organization has been way, way ahead of the ball on that.
Yes, we are. And one of the great things about our organization is we also have an Institute for Innovative Practice, which is our research arm. We know that it's not only good enough to provide services, we want to make sure that our services work and that the recidivism rates, for instance, do decline for folks that are in our services. And in fact, we do work with leading universities, Yale, Wesleyan, University of New Haven, and UConn, many others, work with students, work with faculty to crunch numbers, to crunch our data, and show and prove that our services work, that they're successful, and that people are, for instance, in the community justice services, they are less likely to reoffend if they have taken part in our programs.
And you guys have a track record of success in that department.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we report those numbers back to the state, and that's why, you know, we do continually receive contracts from the state. One of the reasons why is because our services work. And so we demonstrate our own success, and the data that comes from those programs, we sort of, you know, recrunch it and make sure that everything is for the benefit of the public and the people that were being served. Mm.
Well, as we're going to hear from another guest on another segment of today's program, one of the things that is hardest, no matter what the challenge is not being sure when you are able to come home, that there'll be a home to come to. And the connection proudly had established the very first supportive housing program in Connecticut. And this is another thing we've been talking about, thanks to our partnership with the Connection and the agency under preceding names and those that have merged with you over the years. Supportive housing has been a banner we've been flying and supporting for quite a long time. And Liberty Commons is better than ever, thanks to the Connection's work.
It is, and we just celebrated its anniversary recently with a reception there. You know, people really need housing. That's sort of the crux of all of our programs. Without proper housing, people can't move forward in their lives. And I think we all know that the stability of having a place to call home is just one of those basic necessities for people to succeed in life. So all of our programs, most all of our programs are tied directly to housing and homelessness. We work with a number of folks that are experiencing homelessness or may be experiencing homelessness in the near future and try to stabilize their lives, stabilize them through finding safe, affordable housing, stabilize through helping them with budgeting, with care for their family, with household tasks. Everybody comes to us at a different place. We meet people where they are, where they come to us, and we try to enhance their lives and get them functioning so that they can be independent, productive members of society. It's our goal.
Great. We're talking with Beth Conner. She's Director of Communications and Fund Development for The Connection, based in Middletown, but serving individuals across Connecticut with a staff of in excess of 600 people spread across the state, providing services where and when they're needed most, rebuilding health and strengthening communities, and offering less costly alternatives than state programs that help save state taxpayer dollars. They would welcome your support, whether it's volunteerism, or a donation or underwriting of any amount. It's going to make a difference not only for the individuals who are in existing programs, but for the many people who are waiting to be part of them. We're going to have Beth for a few more minutes. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk with Beth Conner from The Connection. We're going to invite you to Unmasking Homelessness, their masquerade ball coming up on May 24th, and remind you about Pizza Fest on the Green in New Haven during the lunch hours on June 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. Beth, stick with us. Folks, stick with us. We'll be right back. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, right after this news. Did you know 4 weekly farmers markets in Greater Hartford accept SNAP EBT? And that you get more market money when you shop these markets with your SNAP EBT card? Visit the farmers markets at Billings Forge, North End, Homestead, and the West End Farmers Markets this week. Use your SNAP EBT card to get fresh, familiar, and healthy foods right in your neighborhood. And visit osnaphartford.org to learn more. That's osnaphartford.org. Well, thanks for hanging around. Beth Connor is on the line with us. She is the Director of Communications and Fund Development for The Connection Incorporated, 40 years strong, serving folks all over the state of Connecticut. And Beth, as we mentioned earlier, when you're around for 40 years and you do the kind of work that The Connection and its other agencies that have come in and under the umbrella of The Connection have been doing for so long, you get noticed. And one of the other programs that probably isn't talked about enough, and frankly because it may make folks uncomfortable, is the Center for the Treatment of Problem Sexual Behavior. But this program has been recognized nationally, and many other agencies are looking to your program at The Connection as a model for good work that's being done in this area all over the country.
Yes, it is a unique niche. A lot of providers do not do this type of work. We do. We do take on a sort of the riskiest clients in society because we do feel that we provide a valuable service. And again, as with the other programs we talked about, we do a lot of research and crunch numbers, and we have shown that this particular program is very effective in reducing recidivism, that folks that are in this program and receive this treatment are far likely to recidivate than those without. So we like to think we know that these situations and these issues are part of our community life. We like to think that we're doing something to help make them better.
Excellent. And as we mentioned, there are some ways that folks can help. Tell us a little bit about how volunteers who come to the agency can provide that kind of necessary backbone that helps you offset expenses that you might end up having to expend on staffing or others, and how folks could help if they can't write a check.
Sure. We do have limited opportunities for volunteers. Unfortunately, most of our staff are working with our clients one-on-one, and volunteers do need to go through a employment vetting process if they're going to be, just because of HIPAA and privacy concerns in that. But we do utilize volunteers throughout the organization to help us do the things that we don't have the funding for. So we have women, for instance, who volunteer their time in our women and children's programs. We have two women and children's programs, one in Groton and one in Middletown. And those women come in and they help babysit the children so moms can go to parenting groups. They may read to the children to give moms a break, help out with the successful running of this group home. So that's, you know, one of the areas that volunteers have been very successful and have really helped us made a difference in offering those niceties. We have a group from the Emblem Club locally in Middletown who for many, many years have come forward with not only donations, but donations of time. And they come into Hallie House, which is our Middletown-based women and children's program, and sit with the women. They play board games. They play card games. They make puzzles. They just listen to them. And sometimes that's just with these young women who are experiencing problems of substance use, domestic violence. It's what they need. They need another ear to listen to. And some of these volunteers just give so much.
That's great. And also, I mean, another way folks can volunteer, aside from, volunteering to purchase a ticket for sanctioned events or coming down and volunteering to have a piece of some of New Haven's greatest pizzerias, but they can have their own activities, barbecues, fundraisers, and designate The Connection as the recipient of those dinner parties, things
like that. Absolutely, absolutely, and that really helps us. And we try to match, interested folks in the community with whatever program they may be interested in sponsoring, or you know, if they just want to give back to the agency. We have many different ways to do that. Many of our programs need certain items, so sometimes it's an in-kind donation of, for instance, blankets for our shelter in the winter months, or diapers for one of our women and children's programs. So things that our state dollars are stretched to purchase, we welcome gifts, in-kind gifts, monetary or in-kind, to help us make those ends meet.
Great. And as our program is broadcasting here on the 14th of May, we've only got about 10 days left for the big event, the Unmasking Homelessness Masquerade Ball. Let folks know how they might be able to get some of the remaining tickets left for that event, please, Beth.
Sure. Well, this is our first annual Unmasking Homelessness Masquerade Ball. And because, John, we serve so many folks that are homeless and are experiencing significant loss due to homelessness, we wanted to focus on this as a cause. And so we'll be providing lots of educational information at the event, but really wanted the event to be fun. So it's at Woodwinds in Brantford, again on May 24th from 6 to 10 p.m. It's a Wednesday evening. And it's a dinner. You get to hear from one of our clients who was formerly homeless and now is doing very well and is employed and self-sufficient, and she talks about her struggles. We have a swing band, Hot Cat Jazz Band, and they will be playing great tunes for people to dance to. We also have a silent auction with some wonderful auction prizes that have been donated from the community. We have a timeshare in Cancun. We have a drone. We have lots of gift baskets, wonderful items, an iPad, all kinds of great things that we hope people will come and bid on during the evening's events.
Super. And as we said earlier in the program, of course, we would like folks that are listening to join us in New Haven for the International Festival of Arts and Ideas, a destination for folks literally all over the world during June every year. And this year, Pizza Fest is part of the International Festival on June 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. So before we run out of time, Beth, just let folks know what hours of operation Pizza Fest is happening on the green.
For those 3 days, John, the Pizza Fest will run from 12 to 1:30. And during the noontime hours, we see lots and lots of folks. It's a wonderful experience. As you know, New Haven's the pizza capital of the United States, and we have some wonderful pizzas to choose from. People are able to, you know, grab pizza and maybe a Italian ice or a beverage, and, you know, make the lunch while helping a worthy cause.
And hang out and hear some live music on the green, or check out some of the cultural arts activities that are happening as part of the festival as well. Great to
It's a fun festive
yes.
event.
Great to talk with you about all of this. Each month, thousands of people across the state of Connecticut are assisted by The Connection and their diverse behavioral health, family support, and community justice programs that reunite families, break the generational cycle of abuse and neglect, create safer, healthier communities, and assist with mental illness and addiction issues. As you've heard, a great organization to get to know. They've been around 40-plus years, so that you know that they're doing it right, and whether you're volunteering or making a donation to The Connection, you know that every dollar is going toward good work. We want to thank Beth Connor, the Director of Communications and Fund Development, for being part of the program this morning, and we'll let her get back to her video shoot so that she can do help to do more good as a result of her affiliation with The Connection. Thanks, Beth. And folks, if you want to learn more, you can find out about all their events and all the good work that's being done on their website at theconnectioninc.org. Well, regular listeners know how we like to celebrate grassroots organizations, especially when those roots bear fruit in the community. And today, our guest is a perfect example of someone who wanted to make a difference, actually, I should say our guests are both individuals that wanted to make a difference. And in the case of April Barron, she went the extra step and has now gone the extra miles to form Helping Hands Outreach, an organization that assists individuals who are experiencing hardship throughout the greater Bridgeport community. They help with food, clothing, shelter, bereavement, and emotional support, and more. And we're so pleased to have her in the studio with us this morning to talk about this organization, how it came to be, how folks who might be listening, who might be inspired to help, can do that. We're going to be celebrating some of their partnerships, as well as their most recent asset acquisition, who's actually sitting here with me as well. Tracy Cruz is here. She is a former client and now current staffer with Helping Hands Outreach. So let's meet April. April, thanks for joining us.
I'm happy to be here.
So tell me a little bit about your life and the journey that led you to deciding you would like to establish a nonprofit agency.
Growing up, I always seen my mother help people. And I used to wonder why. Every time I come downstairs, I'll see someone sitting at our kitchen table and she'll be feeding them, offering them some coffee or, you know, food. So as growing up, I seen that in my house. And as I got older, that's what I did. And I love giving back, making a difference.
So how did you make that jump to going from someone who just sort of, through the goodness of your heart and your family's culture, would reach out and help to an agency that in a few short years really is becoming known amongst challenged communities in Bridgeport? Women and children who are in trouble know your name, individuals who find themselves homeless, even those who may be camped out under highway overpasses know your name. You're becoming a kind of a household word in the greater Bridgeport area.
I like how you put that. December the 4th of 2010, I was on my way to the bank, TD Bank, and that was a Sunday, and I was going on driving down John Street, the underpath, and I seen a bunch of people out there. I thought someone was hurt, so I pulled over. And I ran across the street and I seen this little old lady serving soup under the bridge. So I said, oh my God, is all these people here for soup? And she said, yes. I said, can I help you? And she said, sure, as long as you bring your own food. So the following Sunday, I cooked a bunch of food and I went out there, and I've been going out there ever since.
So at what point did you kind of steer that ship toward establishing a permanent agency that Helping Hands has become?
By going under John Street Bridge every Sunday, I met more people, and a lot of them was homeless out there, and a lot of them had kids. So we did a book bag drive. We started with the book bags, and I met more families. Met more families, and then we went from the book bags, and then we went for the Christmas stuff, and then the Easter. So as days went on, I said, oh my God, this is what I want to do. This is my calling, making a difference in our community, giving back. Mm-hmm. And it felt good to help these families that was in need.
So at that point, you discovered bureaucracy of establishing a nonprofit and a location. Tell us a little bit about what Helping Hands Outreach is today as far as an entity.
Okay, so today, we still feed the homeless under the bridge. We went from feeding the homeless under the bridge to giving out school supplies, giving out Christmas toys. We now have a women and children transitional housing, which is located at 80 Burnell Street. We are able to help 20 families at a time. It's just an amazing feeling. It's amazing.
Tell us about some of the people that you meet. So often on this program, when I'm talking to folks like yourself, whether they're from a long established agency like McGivney or the Cardinal Sheehan Center, or somebody who's relatively new to the Bridgeport nonprofit community, they all say the same thing, that a growing number of the people who they meet were the people who were kind of driving up or writing checks to support these organizations just a few years ago. Are you encountering people who perhaps before the economic downturn in 2008 were not in this disadvantaged position?
Yes, absolutely.
So let's drill into some of the programs that you do and how you have formed some partnerships. I guess there's a lot of organizations in Greater Bridgeport, as I said, that have heard of you, and you're starting to get some support, not only from the grassroots in the community, but from some other corporate sponsors.
Yes, I get my biggest sponsor is Subaru. The city of Bridgeport also sponsor us with the grant, the EESG grant, and then I get private sponsors. So there, it's coming together as far as the sponsor and the support.
And how do you, did you use some of the money that was raised to establish this housing situation? Tell us a little bit about how those funds are kind of channeled to do the most good.
Okay, so Subaru last year, they gave us a total of $69,000. And with that $69,000, I was able to lease a house to start our family women and children program.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about that the process of getting that set up.
The process, it was a challenging process of getting that set up. I met someone when I was at the meeting at the mayor's office, and he approached me and he told me that he had a house and for me to come look at the house. So I went to look at the house. I loved the house. It was big enough so we can help, you know, a large, about 20, 25 families. So then we went and we done our paperwork, and the second floor was a total of 10 bedrooms. So we paid for the second floor for the whole year. Mm-hmm. And then we was getting calls for the third floor, more families from different agencies like DCF and Family and Children's Services. Mm. So we decided to take the third floor of the building. And we still getting calls.
Yeah. So obviously there's way more need than Helping Hands could possibly accommodate at this point.
Yes.
But now that you have the experience of going through establishing that kind of facility under your belt, do you think you have the ability, if you had the underwriting to do it, to expand to a neighboring building or somewhere else in a neighborhood that needs it?
Yes, we are looking to buy our own house, Helping Hands, not only one, two, so we can help more of the people that's in need.
Okay, super. One of the other programs that you mentioned that you do was starting to get together back to school supplies and things, also Easter and holiday toy drives for the community. Now that we're coming into the summer months, kids are out of school. Is there anything from a programming standpoint that you are doing or planning to do coming into the summer 2017?
Yes, we are planning to have a book bag drive in the parking lot of 80 Burnell Street. We also trying to put together a camp so the kids could have different activities for the summer, and sponsoring different organizations so they would have something to do. Like Carriel School, we sponsor them for the kids can go play basketball for the summer.
Oh, okay.
Different agency we sponsor, and so they could have something to do during the summer.
Oh, good. Like little strategic helping hands.
Different things that we do, yes.
Super. HelpingHandsBPT.org is the website, or you can check them out on Facebook. Helping Hands Outreach is where you want to go to learn more about the great work that's being done with April Barron and now recently to the agency, Tracy Cruz. Before we meet Tracy, April, set us up. Tell us a little bit about this young lady.
Tracy is amazing, amazing young lady. She came to Helping Hands over a month ago, and I seen great, great potential in her. Very smart, very smart. I love her kids, very respectful. And I've seen a lot in her, so we decide to give Tracy a part-time job at Helping Hands, and I'm so excited to have her on board with us.
Super. Tracy, welcome to the radio. Tell us a little bit about, of all of the service agencies, you ended up with Helping Hands.
Well, I came to Helping Hands because I was in a certain situation, and Helping Hands was really the only one that had somewhere available for me. So April took me in and I got a change of atmosphere and a change of scenery and just the whole different mindset, just moving in and just having the peace of mind.
Mm.
And, you know, since I've been there, I've been able to acquire employment, and I've been able to acquire an apartment within a month that I've been there.
Super. So. Outside of the realm of the women and children's sheltering place, or within the
within.
Oh, super. Okay, yeah. So you're a tenant in this leased space. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that's great. Do you find that there's support and comfort in being in a community of folks who may have experienced some of the same types of challenges that you did?
Yes,
and, you
know, definitely.
Pull yourselves along.
Yeah, it's always nice to know that you're not the only one going through something and that you have someone to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, it's great to know that there are people who care, and, you know, there are people that won't look down on you or be prideful of helping someone. So,
and how about the kids?
Oh, the kids love it. the kids are April lets the kids be kids, and that's what they love. They mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't bother April for the kids to run around and the kids to play, and you know, I think that they have more peace of mind as well.
Excellent. So if you were able, obviously we hear that there's now a waiting list and hopes to expand the Helping Hands network and residential opportunities. But there's got to be a lot of people out there, even in the greater Bridgeport area, that were in the bad place or something like the bad place that you were in months or you know, some time ago. What would you say to them if you met them and they needed what you needed before you met April?
I would just say have faith. I would say, you know, it's hard now, but everything's gonna come. And, you know, I'm not saying, how does the quote go, I'm not saying that it's gonna be easy, but it's gonna be worth it.
Okay, great, super. Well, I appreciate you taking a few minutes to tell us a little bit of a personal perspective. Well, from a client who became a staffer to one of their biggest supporters. We heard earlier in the interview how Subaru has been such a supporter. We're, of course, talking about Dan Perkins Subaru, and Gary Seidner is with us. He's the marketing manager for Dan Perkins Subaru. And as he said, as we met this morning, this project with Helping Hands Outreach is his baby. Gary, tell us a little bit about how you first discovered this organization.
Well, actually, what we do is leverage a an event that's held by Subaru of America, and during the holiday season, what we do is what Subaru does, I should say, is they donate a certain amount of money to five national charities.
Mm-hmm.
Each dealership is allowed to pick a local charity as well. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's 4 years we've done this with Helping Hands. The first year, Let me backtrack just a little bit.
Sure.
For every new car sold, there's a $250 donation from Subaru, and customers can split that up. They can split it up between Meals on Wheels and other things like that.
Sure. This is the Share the Love umbrella.
Exactly, the Share the Love umbrella.
Okay.
And basically what we do, what I did was I put a system in place to try to extract more dollars for our local charity, where we make our living, where we live, where
sure.
we see people every single day.
Right, right.
It's very, very important to us. So the first year we, I think it was like $2,300, and this year it was $75,000.
Wow.
So we're dedicated to helping the community, whether it's certainly Helping Hands is our favorite guys right now, and contribute back to the community in which we pay our own rent.
And escalating that level of support quite handsomely, I'd say.
Indeed. and hopefully so. I mean, I had thoughts of going to Brazil with that money.
Yeah,
that was
well,
great. That would have kept me for about 3 weeks, probably.
Yeah, well, it would have kept you till you came around a corner and April was standing there with a hook.
That's exactly right.
And a bag to put
that's
that
right.
money in and take it back to Helping Hands. So so that's great. It's fantastic collaboration. Really, I think we have the three perfect people here in studio. studio with us to tell the whole story of Helping Hands, how it all started with April just driving by and seeing gathered homeless people under a bridge, highway overpass in Bridgeport, and coming back the next week and starting to serve food that she made in her own kitchen, to this standalone nonprofit, which has welcomed people like our other guest, Tracy Cruz, who's now applying her assets to making the organization better, and all the time the guardian angel and the ultimate helping hands of Subaru Share the Love and Dan Perkins, with now their $75,000 plus this year, and significant contributions over the 4 years that they've been supporting the event. Once again, if you'd like to learn more about the organization, you can go to helpinghandsbpt.org, check out their brand new website, learn about them, determine whether you have a way to help Helping Hands do more good work. As you hear, they have a waiting list at their shelter for women and children, or you could check them out on Facebook and put some names to the faces of the folks that were on the program this morning. We want to thank our guests once again, founder and CEO April Barron, Tracy Cruz, and of course Gary Seidner, marketing manager at Dan Perkins Subaru, for the great work you all are doing in the community. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheelers Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.